At the end of the day, most of our festivals are celebrating the victory of good over evil in different stories, in different epics. And it's wonderful to be part of the food and all of that. It's a communal celebration in that way. But for me, meditation at this point becomes a path for inward growth. And once I meditate, then I can enjoy it even better. So I think all these aspects of celebration of festivals and divinity help you to be part of the community as well as help you to grow from within.
On In Good Faith, we believe that all faith traditions have something to teach us about how God is working in the world and in our lives. So join us as we listen and learn and discover how speaking with people of other faiths can strengthen our own faith and even our own practice. Today, we're talking to a woman with a long career in banking and management consultancy who turned her skills to working with federal agencies and interfaith community building. And our conversation dives into what all of these have taught her about her own faith. Anju Bhargava, a Vedantic teacher and ordained Hindu minister and chaplain, was appointed to the inaugural White House Advisory Council on Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships, where she founded Hindu America Seva Communities to promote community service and social justice. She's also served on the Department of Homeland Security's Faith-Based Security and Communications Advisory Committee for the White House and served as the first Chief Risk Officer at the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, Deputy Chief Strategy Officer at the Social Security Administration, and Senior VP at Bank of America.
I grew up in Pan India. My father worked for a multinational company and he got transferred all over India. So I got to experience different cultures firsthand and learn different languages firsthand. And I grew up in a Hindu household, but went to Catholic schools for both my schooling as well as my college. So I grew up in a very multicultural, multi-religious environment. And one of the things that my grandmother had taught us was ekam sat vipra bahute, that let good thoughts come from all direction. So that has been the foundation of my teaching, what my grandmother and mother taught. So be open to all different ideas. And I would say that that is really one of the key tenets of Hinduism, so that you grow as an individual. And Hinduism's goal is sat chit anand, which means truth-filled, blissful consciousness. So in that effort to be in that state of mind and spirit, be open to growing and let good thoughts come from all directions.
Well, that seems like that would really have informed you too as a community leader and doing interfaith work.
Yeah. My daughter was about 2 years old when she asked me why she looked different. This was way back in the early 80s. And we as a community had just come in and was settling in. And I was in New Jersey. And when my daughter asked, we didn't have much of an infrastructure in America. So I knew some stuff about Hinduism, but not enough to try to teach a child and children like her who were born in America some aspects of the tradition so that they have a sense of pride in who they are and their identity tied to their culture. So that's how I learned about Hinduism, trying to teach her and growing with her. So I would say that I'm a born-again Hindu-American who has grown with my daughter as she has grown. And, you know, the doors opened. I became part of our Interfaith Clergy Association in the 90s in the town that I lived in at that time, Livingston, New Jersey, which in many ways was a microcosm of America. I had an Anglican neighbor who became sort of my adopted mother. And she was very open-minded. She used to have dinner at her house every Friday night and would invite all kinds of different people. And I think my American interfaith education evolved at her dining table in talking with her and meeting different people. And she was as much part of my community as much as I was part of her community. It was just a beautiful experience being with Jean Brown.
I think there's something about a cuisine community that sort of puts everyone a little bit at ease and we're sharing something with each other. Involving food, always a good idea.
Good, yeah. You relax.
I've been able to read a little bit about you through some interviews you've done, including a lovely article on Substack about some challenges. And I wonder what practice, and maybe you can describe this from your personal spiritual life, makes you feel grounded or gives you peace. You talk a little bit in one article about Sakshi.
being an observer. Right. So that is very much integral part of Vedantic Hinduism. So in Hinduism, we have the philosophy and the core is we are all one. And as I mentioned, goal is Satchitanand, being in that blissful consciousness. And the practice, the rituals and so on, you see, the ancients had developed it as an outward expression of reaching that goal. So everything we did was for the one divine. And divine qualities, it was understood, would be very difficult for people to understand the whole encompassing aspect of the divineness of the divine. So symbols were developed, Ganesh meaning a focus on that divine quality which removes obstacles and so on. And over time, I educated myself, and I'm very blessed that my parents kept supplying me with all kinds of Vedantic books that helped me to understand a lot about life. I also had a Christian Science oriented teacher from whom I also got input. And then I went into meditation, Vipassana, which to me was the culmination of a lot of the philosophical aspects that I had learned, but that I could experience it within my own self. To cultivate that mindset and be able to be in that calm state of mind and become an observer that, okay, this is happening, and reduce my reaction to that which is happening to me. So you mentioned the challenge. One of the recent challenges that I went through, 3 years ago, I was diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer. And I wasn't afraid. It was like, okay, this is happening to the body. I don't identify with the dis-ease and I can observe it. And I just went around. I had not put my will together and stuff. So I did what needed to be done in functioning in the world. But from an emotional point of view, I am grateful. I'm extremely grateful to the universe, to the divine, that it happened at a point in my life where I was more mature and more developed as a being, that I could handle this and take it in my stride and say, okay, this is happening. So that meditation technique and meditation as a whole, because I've tried many different meditations and I think everything builds upon itself, that along with knowledge, understanding I am that I am, so to say, I aham Brahman, that is what has really kept me grounded.
Many people are driven to spiritual practice by difficulties. And this sounds like an instance where the practice you had already established really helped you maintain that equilibrium.
So for me, my biggest difficulty was when I was 29, 30 years old, when I got divorced. That to me was like, oh my gosh, how am I going to live over here with no support system and keep roof over my head and bring my daughter up in a country that now is hers and I am, quote unquote, an ancestor for her and make sure that I am employed and so on. So that is what gave me the incentive to really work on myself. And so when this particular thing happened, I was in a good place to be able to deal with it. That was actually much more challenging for me because I was young and I didn't know anything. And the whole uncertainty of life in the future was different. And by the time the disease came, I was at a point of retiring. And I was like, okay, let's go along with this now. Let's see what this will bring.
You were the only Hindu member of President Obama's inaugural Advisory Council on Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnerships.
Right.
What did you learn in that process about faith in America? And even the people on your council, were they familiar with Hinduism and those practices?
So the council didn't get into the practice. It was more of bringing a perspective from your faith into providing a voice to the government. I think my biggest take was that I didn't know how much religion is involved in government in America. We thought that there was a separation of church and state. But religion plays a huge role in the government. And it was actually in Clinton administration. And at that time, I was in a community builder fellow in the White House when he formed the White House Office of Faith-Based and Neighborhood Partnership. And we didn't know anything about it. And I told my community, we need to get engaged. They said, okay, tell us about it. And at that time, I wrote a strategy paper for the then White House on Asian Americans, what our needs are from a community perspective. Then when I got this opportunity, I was, again, you know, seeds get planted. And I do believe that you just keep following the yellow brick road and somehow the universe is guiding you towards wherever you're supposed to go. If you don't resist it, just go with it. When this was done, I was like, now is my opportunity to learn how it is done. And what I couldn't do in 98, 2000, maybe in 2008, I can help the community understand how America functions. And so I did write a strategy paper on who we are as a community and learned about the 13 federal government branches and what it does and how each one by then had an office of faith-based partnership. You know, Department of Homeland Security has one and so on. Each department has one. And how they interact and helped educate the new Eastern tradition communities. And I did include not just the Hindu, but Jain, Buddhists, and Sikhs also to come in because it was the first time somebody of Eastern tradition was there. And I learned a lot. And so one takeaway was how everything works. So I kind of brought that out into the community to learn how it works. And we were 25 people and setting policy. A lot of it were from diverse Christian backgrounds, you know, a couple of Jewish people, a couple of Muslim people, and me. And they were also secular, but like Boys and Girls Club of America and Catholic Charities and so on. When you are a minority in a setting, it's not whether Hinduism is a minority or not. When you are a minority representative in a setting, you can't do it alone. You need help from others who say, it is better for us collectively to work together. The same thing happened how I got into my Interfaith Clergy Association in Livingston in the mid-90s. We had some incident and it was a Jewish rabbi and the Greek Orthodox Church and the Episcopalians and the Catholic and the Lutherans who recognized that, okay, now it's time to have a non-Judeo-Christian person come in. And they kind of invited me to become part of the clergy association. And at that time, I wasn't so much into the clergy frame of mind, but I learned. And again, you know, I tried to blend in the two aspects in my first sermon that I gave on Interfaith Thanksgiving, in which I blended Our Father, the Lord's Prayer, along with the Vedantic aspects, because there are many universal aspects in it, and communicated my thoughts on Thanksgiving from all those perspectives. But they brought me in too. I had an interest, but they enabled me to feel comfortable. And I think the same thing happened in President Obama's advisory council. There were ideas that I represented and people did work with me in including me. So it works both ways. You have to have an understanding of where they are coming from. They've been here for a long time and they understand. And then them wanting to bring us in and bring me in and with me have an opportunity to participate and give my perspective in it.
So it seems important first to know how to represent a community.
Yes.
But also to be willing not just to be there as a representative and here's what you need to look out for us, but to have curiosity and listening to the others.
Yes, it works both ways. You know, you have to support ideas. And there are some ideas which, especially in the global arena, that we were kind of watchful about, you know, in global development, people in areas where there's not conversion are wary of that kind of an effort. So we try to bring that. It was hard. So just make sure that the policies are reflective of all our thoughts.
This is In Good Faith. We're speaking with Anju Bhargava, interfaith leader and American Hindu. In Good Faith is a resource where you can learn about people from all faith traditions. If you'd like to hear more about Hindu practitioners, check out episode 115 with Raj Mankad of the Houston Chronicle or our panel discussion of the Bhagavad Gita with Ravi Gupta in episode 180. Find all of our episodes on Apple, Spotify, and YouTube. And share an episode that's meant something to you with the people in your life. If you're like me, you want to stay informed, even about some of the tough topics that have to be discussed. But so much of the discussion just really doesn't move anything forward or generate light as much as heat. That's where Top of Mind comes in, a BYU original podcast. They understand how polarizing those kind of conversations can be, and they want to help us engage in that challenge while actually learning something. Their goal is developing empathy for others. Top of Mind can help you clarify your own views, become an effective advocate for the things you care about,
and even challenge your way of thinking so you can become a better citizen, a kinder neighbor. Listen to Top of Mind now on the BYU Radio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
More from Anju Bhargava.
I'd love to ask about this idea. I've never heard it put a Hindu minister. I know a priest at our local Krishna temple. Would you call that a priest or an officiant or minister?
Probably an officiant, you know, if they are registered in that way. So I don't follow a traditional path. I'm an American product of my, you know, being a Hindu female priest, minister, chaplain.
What was it that made you feel that was important or part of your path? That's what you wanted and felt like it was something you needed to do.
I think it evolved. You know, I had to be a career person. That was my day life. But I also recognized that I could play a bridge between my community and the community at large in helping us understand and how to integrate. And it was the mayor of my town who said that if you really want to reach the hearts and minds of people, become part of the clergy association. You know so much. You share that with others. And with Jean Brown, we navigated to a point where I was like, okay, this would be a good thing. And actually it became a good thing because I was able to explain, understand the rituals and connect it with the philosophy so that you're not just doing something, you know, it's like going to a mass, which is only in Latin, then you don't follow everything. So a lot of our prayers are done only in Sanskrit. So people don't follow everything and they just do. But I was able to put the meaning behind it. So it became relevant to my community. And I thought, I can do this. This is something unique that I bring to the table. That understanding from so many different thoughts, which I had been grown up to believe in, that let good thoughts come from all directions, that I can help young people and others understand their own tradition in a better way. And I enjoyed it. It was another way of being with the people in Livingston and being part of the clergy association and sharing my thoughts, my tradition, and being just one of everybody else. So I just grew into it. It just happened to me. I didn't have a master plan, and I'm glad that it evolved into it because there were steps along the journey which led me to be appointed to President Obama's advisory council because I was unique in that way. And I would have done community building fellowship in the Clinton administration and here. So it just evolved. I think this was what my real life was meant to be.
Let me ask you the combination of professional and spiritual, because I think everybody has something they have to work out. And some people just say, I'm two people, these are two different things, and that they shall never meet. But where you're working in Medicare or Social Security Administration, or you were a senior vice president at the Bank of America, in your profession, did you find that your actions or decisions are influenced by your own faith or connection to the divine?
You know, in the early years, I was a struggling corporate person and growing myself and just learning how to manage myself through the whole process. But I think over time, you know that you have the strength to get through anything. And also you think a little bit more, you pause, and that gives you time to think through stuff. And you deal with people in a better way because you can relate to them as humans, as one-on-one. And also, you're able to think more creatively. When you are helping somebody, regardless of what their background is, when you need help, it comes back to you. It just works in a very nice way. So I feel very blessed that so many people came along and were with me through my senior roles as well, and mentors who supported me, just as I supported others and mentored them.
Is there something that you think, gosh, if everyone could just know this, is there some common misunderstanding or misconception that you most often have had to correct or say, let me clear that up for you?
I think there are a few. One is people don't realize that Hinduism is actually, in a way, monotheistic, that there is only one God, and that the symbols that we have and the different deities we have, they are not capital G gods per se. They are expressions of the divine quality. We're not idol worshippers. They are all murtis or symbols of a particular divine aspect that we ourselves need to know better about it and also share that with others. Because the Hindu narrative was not brought out into the world by Hindus. It was brought out by those who conquered us. So those who conquered us saw only the exotic aspects of our tradition. And without understanding all the other layers behind it, that is what came out into the world. So I wish people would understand that. And I think the other aspect is that in our tradition, there's not one path to salvation. There are many other paths to it.
I'm wondering, is there a particular observance or festival or ceremony that to you is very meaningful and it makes you feel connected to the divine?
I think that at the end of the day, most of our festivals are celebrating the victory of good over evil in different stories, in different epics. And it's wonderful to be part of the food and all of that. It's a communal celebration in that way. But for me, meditation at this point becomes a path for inward growth. And once I meditate, then I can enjoy it even better. So I think all these aspects of celebration of festivals and divinity help you to be part of the community as well as help you to grow from within.
Thank you very much. I'm curious, because you founded the Hindu American Seva Community and Charities for Bridging Service and Spirituality, and they do seem really rooted together, as you said, serving other people. How have you seen that create common ground with different communities between different faiths?
So I think when you peel back everything, helping others is common in all traditions, regardless of where you are, what faith you believe in, or feel that's where you're going to find your salvation. We found that when people come together and see each other as humans, helping each other, if there are historical barriers that may be there for generations, that see person A of a particular religion in a certain light, all that gets stripped down. And you are just human beings then. Those external identities kind of drop in a way that becomes very meaningful to focus on something else. And that's where you find the common good, which I think is a very Christian expression, but I love that expression of finding the common good. And I think everybody, all traditions do that. In our tradition, when I was going to a conference in 2012, I was one of the speakers on a panel called Am I My Brother's Keeper? And I was trying to figure out, okay, from a Hindu perspective, am I my brother's keeper is very much a biblical expression. How do I say it in those words? And I was listening to one of our swamis are teachers, that again, if going back to the path of our path of salvation of Satchitanand, the truth-filled, blissful consciousness, it starts with empathy. The first step of anything is empathy. So when you open your heart and are empathetic in giving to people, you're following your dharma, you're following what you're supposed to do, and you are creating and increasing that positive vibrations that make the world a better place. So it was an interesting way of looking at it from a Hindu perspective that I was able to participate in.
A few of my Hindu friends have mentioned an important guru or leader. Did you have someone who was that figure for you?
No, I'm a non-aligned person. I didn't have any one particular guru. I learned from many. I grew up in an environment in which my grandfather was a seeker, and he went and learned from many teachers. And my father inherited that love for knowledge and meeting different kind of people. And I was, I would say, dragged when I was a kid and a teenager to listen to a different variety of people. And when I came to America, I found a lot of people, very knowledgeable people, and I learned a lot from them, but not from one source only. And if I would say one source, I would say it's going back to the original Vedantic thoughts, the library of books that we have, and learning from there, because every guru sort of distills it according to their understanding and version. And I did hear the interpretations of many, but then I went back to the source and then figured out whose interpretation I liked better for the Bhagavad Gita, for this book, for that book, and what made sense to my personality.
Thank you. Is there something I should ask you, but I don't know to ask you?
In today's world, there is so much of polarization and lack of understanding of others that I wish we could increase more dialogues, or at least bring a perspective for people to understand in snippets. At least what Hinduism is, I'll talk from that perspective. The Hindus have written about misperceptions. But just like in my Livingston Interfaith Clergy Association, it was all the other faiths who helped us. And in Barack Obama's advisory council, the other faiths kind of, you know, we are at a very vulnerable stage, I feel, in American history, that it would be great to have some more support, that it's okay to be a Hindu in America.
Many thanks to Anju Bhargava for speaking with me. This episode was produced by Heidi Clough. Our production team includes Heather Bigley, Nick Levitt, and Ocean Marshall. Our post-production sound designer is Gabriel Haro. In Good Faith is committed to the idea that we all benefit from hearing people of widely varying backgrounds share their personal experience with faith and belief. In fact, we think people with such experience deserve some of our best listening. You can check out more of our episodes and extended interviews on our YouTube channel and connect with us on Instagram and Facebook at In Good Faith Podcast. In Good Faith is a production of BYU Radio. I'm Stephen Cap Perry. I hope you join me again soon right here in Good Faith.